You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, February 27th, 2016. You're listening to episode 248. My name is Rob. Sitting across the table is Jason. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. It's a beautiful day outside.
It was a beautiful day today.
It was a beautiful day. And we're recording on Valentine's Day.
Yes.
So we are ignoring our wives and sitting in your basement talking right. About games, like good husbands.
My wife said to me, and I said this to you, my wife says, hey, next Tuesday is Valentine's Day. You guys are recording that day. I was like, yeah. And she's like, I don't care. You just want to make sure that Christine doesn't care. Yeah. And then I asked you and you said, I'm pretty sure she doesn't care.
Right.
And you're sitting here, so I have to assume she doesn't care.
So I talked to her. I said, so I don't think you care, but I want to give you the opportunity to disagree with me. We're recording on Valentine's Day. She said, no, I don't care. I have my dance class on that day. So
I was going to ditch you anyways.
Yeah, right. So
nice.
Yeah. So that's cool. It's Valentine's Day. Did you get your wife anything good?
Nothing.
No,
we don't trade gifts.
No. Okay.
We usually don't. The only reason we do gifts for Christmas anymore is because we get them because the kids want to get gifts.
Yeah. So. Okay. We generally don't do that either. Like, we've agreed for, I think, the past four Christmases not to buy each other anything. And then, of course, I always buy her something for Christmas because that's what I'm supposed to do, right? Right. This past Christmas, though, was the first year where I held true to that and I didn't buy her anything and she didn't buy me anything and it was fine. So I bought her flowers. So we agreed for Valentine's Day we would not do anything. So I bought her flowers.
Oh, so you did do something.
I mean, it was just a bouquet of roses from Walgreens that morning, but, you know, it's so, still.
You mean this morning?
Well, this morning, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when builders are hearing this, it's a couple of weeks in the past,
true.
But whatever.
I don't have to. So I used to get flowers for stuff sometimes just to be nice, but now Josiah is always asking, can we get mom flowers?
Oh.
Sure. So the key is, though, they get to pick them out, which means she gets some interesting choices. And right now, she has roses upstairs that he picked out on Monday, but normally it's the gaudiest, most fluorescent-y, bright flowers he can find. So not what I would have picked for her. Like roses, those look pretty nice. And he actually picked nice ones, but
good.
Him and Laurel both love. And in fact, when she went on her trip and she was gone for 3 nights and so they didn't see her for 4 days, they wanted to get her flowers, but they were so concerned about who got to pick that we got her two bouquets because I wasn't going to argue with them because they wanted to see their mom and they wanted to get her flowers. So I was like, you know what? We'll just get two.
Sure.
It's cool.
That's cool.
She'll think it's awesome.
Right on. Yeah. Yeah. I had a big business meeting earlier this week. Big meeting with the president of the company. I go out to lunch with a vendor that took me out to lunch, and then we're going to have a big meeting after that. I'm at lunch, and I bite down a sandwich, and I broke my tooth.
Wait, what?
You couldn't see it? I've been careful to keep that side of my mouth kind of closed, so broke a tooth over here.
Okay, so no, I did notice that you were talking weird, and I wondered why, and now I understand why.
Because I'm super self-conscious about it.
Well, of course, I would be too.
Yeah, so got to go to the dentist later this week. I haven't been to a dentist in too long.
Does it hurt?
No.
Oh, that's good.
Right, so. Luckily.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm not going
to try and have him cap it.
Well, probably, I guess.
Expensive.
I know, right?
The only thing worse is if you like have to rip your tooth out and put a fake one in.
It's
like $4,000.
Hopefully, we.
I haven't done that, but I know somebody that recently had to.
Yeah. Oh man, dentists are just so mean. Apologies if any of our builders out there are dentists, but I've never been to a dentist that did not treat me like a total piece of garbage.
Do you have a? I haven't. She's really nice, but. But I don't want to tell you who to go to because she's not on our plan. Mm. So, like, we pay extra because she's nice.
Yeah.
So, because it's hard to find that.
Well, a coworker of ours referred me to somebody that she's very, very happy with. So I'm going to give him a shot. Oh, man, I hate dentists, though.
All I can keep thinking when you talk about mean dentists is, because I'm your dentist.
Oh, yeah.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yeah. That's great. That's great.
Now spit.
Yeah.
Right.
That's great.
That's one of the roles that I actually thought Steve Martin was funny in.
Oh, Steve Martin's hilarious.
Steve Martin, like when I see him talking in interviews and doing his banjo-y thing, I think he's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Martin in most movies, I don't think is funny at all.
He's made a lot of bad movies. Yeah, absolutely. But when he's just doing his humor, he's hilarious.
Right. With the exception of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, because that was mostly because he was the perfect straight man straight of John man, Candy. Yeah. The movie Father of the Bride, he does all right with, but again, it's because, well, who's in that? The little guy,
Martin Short.
Yeah. Cause he is so crazy and out there that the straight man he does works very well.
Yeah.
He's just, I think what I don't like Steve Martin is when he's trying to be funny, right? Mm-hmm. Straight man, Steve Martin. I like,
so you don't like The Jerk.
I think The Jerk is one of the dumbest movies I've ever seen, ever. Right. Why do they hate these cans of paint? It's just not funny to me. Like, I just don't get that.
I think it's pretty funny.
You know what? Also, another movie I catch a lot of flack for hating.
Who's that?
Dumb and Dumber. I don't get it. I don't get it. I actually love Jeff Daniels. Mm-hmm. Love him. But again, Jeff Daniels is funny when he's sarcastic, right? That movie, I don't get it. Okay. I just don't get it.
All right.
Well, that and pretty much every Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
Except for The Wedding Singer, one of my faves.
Happy Gilmore's really funny.
I did laugh quite a bit at Happy Gilmore, but like Billy Madison is one of the dumbest movies I've ever seen in my life.
I don't care for Billy Madison either.
Chasing the Penguin or something? I don't
know. Whatever. I don't even care. You know what? The person that I never got was Chris Farley. Never got Chris Farley. Never connected with me.
For me, it was Chris Farley and David Spade.
Well, they were a team up in a lot of situations. Yeah, David Spade I also never found very funny, but yeah, Chris Farley just never connected for me. I don't know.
Anyways, so that was a tangent.
Sure was.
As tangential as they come, right? So anyways, let's talk about a topic. So we didn't actually have a topic. What we have is a series of questions that we were asked.
There you go.
We were asking for topics. We got one last week from Seth, but we didn't get one, anything that was really big enough to be a topic. But we did get some good questions that we thought we could do the whole topic time with. Because they were good questions.
Yep.
So, all right. The first one is from our best Yeti buddy, the TV star, the man, the myth, the legend, Joshua J. Mills.
Josh Mills. A lot of people don't know that the middle initial, that J, is just Josh again.
Yep.
It's Joshua Josh. Yeah. It's an interesting factoid about Mr. Mills.
It is. I think probably the reason for that is being from South Carolina, that really is, that's kind of a tradition in South Carolina to have that double name.
Sure.
They probably just called him JJ when he was little, you know, or Josh. Josh,
you know, it's thing like Billy Bob, Billy Joe, you know,
Josh,
two first names, right?
Exactly.
It's real common.
Exactly.
And it just simplifies it if you make it the same name twice.
Yeah.
But see, it's not technically the same name because it's Joshua Josh.
Right.
You know, it's not Joshua, so, all
right. That is,
I don't mean to belabor the point,
but it's confusing. My son would say it's a little bit of confusing, but not if you're from South Carolina.
Right.
Okay.
My family, my dad's family's from North Carolina.
Oh, much better. Much better. Yeah. North Carolina. Chris Kirkman lives in North Carolina.
Sure.
Super nice dude.
Yeah.
So,
smart people in North Carolina.
South, it's a little harder, but
You know, hey, you know. They're trying though.
But we still like Josh.
They're doing the best they can. He's doing the best he can.
He is. He's
with
doing
what
the
he's
best
got.
He can. Exactly.
With the background that he's been given.
Exactly. So Joshua Josh Mills has a question here. He says, with Unpub coming up, how do you save or salvage a playtest gone lackluster? When he says playtest, I assume he means a game.
I assume
a
whole
game, not just one playtest.
I think what you do is you immediately start drinking until you forget that it ever happened.
Sounds like Rob's play.
Just wipe it out of your brain. Never happened.
Well, you know, Josh, I think we've all had that moment, right? You had that last year, right? Right before Unpub, the game you wanted to bring didn't work out.
I did, yeah, right.
Yeah, and you had to quick make another game. So you've got some options, Josh. You could quick make another game. You could, and you're a smart dude. I'm sure you can do it. You could try and figure out look at your game and say, what is making it lackluster? Is it just lackluster to you because you've played tested it so many times? Because that happens, right? You can have a game you're really excited about. You can play test it a lot. People can love it, but you can hate the game at the time you're done because you've done so much testing with it, so much development, that it just kind of loses, you lose that spark, right? So see if you can find that spark for the game. Mm-hmm. If that's still not there, think about changing themes. Sometimes it's a good mechanics and good, you know, and bad. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. And I think important thing for to keep in mind is it was it lackluster just for you?
Right.
Or was lackluster for you and the players, you know?
Right.
Just one bad playtest does not mean you have a bad game. You know, it could have just been that group of folks, or it could just be that you're not excited about it anymore because you're too close to it or you're too familiar with it. By the end there with Saloon Tycoon, I was just so done with that game. I never wanted to play it again. Because I've been just beating my head against it for, I mean, I don't mean beating my head, but I've been working on it. I've been so deep into it for, you know, almost 3 years. And right. I just it wasn't fun anymore. There was nothing about the theme that excited me anymore. And so if I hadn't already sold the game, I probably would have just thrown it away because I was just tired of it at that point, right? Which would have been a mistake. So that's an important thing. Was it lackluster because you're too close to it? Or was it lackluster because those players didn't connect with it? And just because they didn't connect with it doesn't mean that it's not working, because there are always going to be groups that don't connect.
Right.
Yeah. So remind yourself of that. And try to remind yourself what you liked about it in the first place. Remind yourself, you got to tell yourself, hey, this is the thing that excites me about it. And focus on that. And if taking a fresh look and reminding yourself of that from a fresh perspective, that could open you up to some new ideas.
I agree. The one last note on that, I would just say that, yeah, I mean, really, really try and ignore your feelings, like, and focus on the players. That's important, because they're the ones you're trying to please.
Mm-hmm.
And the very last piece of advice I give, you know, if you really need help, you know, Jason Tagmeier is a really smart guy. He might be able to help you. So you can always ask his advice. And he has helped me tremendously on some games. So, you know, Josh, that'd be my suggestion for you. All right.
I think what you're really saying is talk to another designer, period.
I mean, yeah. I'd recommend Jason Tagmeier.
Tagmeier's a smart guy, and he'll give you the straight shooter on that. But, I mean,
anyone else, talk to any designer. Yeah. Josh, Tagmeier's your man. I mean, he understands you.
Okay.
All right. So, Stellaris Games has a couple questions here.
Okay.
First one is, as a designer, what do you do when a game similar to the one you're working on is announced?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I hate when that happens.
Like I said before, drink. Just go straight to the bottle. Zero to drunk in $20, man. And just forget. Just wipe it out of your brain. Just care. It never happened.
There are really two options. One, you could ignore it, throw your game away. There are several options. That's the first one. The second would be ignore it and just trudge on and understand there will be some comparisons. Or the third thing, and this is probably the smartest one to do, go play that game if you can, or find out from someone who knows about the game everything you can find out about that game to figure out if the game is enough like your game to even matter.
Yeah, I mean, that's the right answer.
Yeah, and then you make a judgment call as to what you need to do. You know, I had my Minecart Madness game when Crazy Carts came out. I panicked a little bit, and then I emailed Chevy Dodd, because he works with Portal, and I just said, hey, can you tell me a little about this game? And he sent me the description about the game, and I was like, this is a completely different game.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, done, I'm okay. And I moved on, and I kept working on the game. You know, had he come back and said, he described my game, my next thought would have been, how about I find a different theme?
Yeah.
And am I still energized by that? And if I am, then I move forward. Mm-hmm. All right. So,
you know, another thing to keep in mind is think about where you are in your development versus where that game is in its development. Because Kickstarter has a short memory. So if that game is just been announced because it's about to launch a Kickstarter, it's launching on Kickstarter right now, you know, people are going to be excited about that right now. You know, if your game is a year or more out from actually hitting the market, it's not like people have to choose from two games that are the same thing right now, you know? Unless that's where you are. If that's where you are, then that's a struggle. But
if your game hits Kickstarter the same day theirs does, hopefully yours is better.
Right. But if yours is a year away, maybe even 2 years away, then I think the impact is lessened. There will still be comparisons because some people will remember, you know, because people who bought that game are going to remember. Likewise, you know, that if it was Kickstarter, that game's not going to ship instantaneously. It's going to take, I don't know, six months to a year to actually be manufactured and shipped. But some buffer time makes it a little more acceptable, a little less painful. So keep that in mind as well.
Yes, that's good. Another question from Stellaris is, what do you do while you wait for a publisher, contest judge to get back to you? This is one we've had a lot, right? This is a question we've answered more than once, but it's an easy answer.
Right. Drink. Just drink and try to forget, you know?
Yeah. And while you're drinking, just make sure that drinking or not, you just don't do too much with the game, right? Now, if you're somebody who's the type of person that likes to submit the same game to multiple publishers at the same time or multiple contests, first mm-hmm. of all, as long as that is understood by the publisher or contest people, there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. You should do that. But I always advocate for doing as little as possible while the publisher has a game mm-hmm. because when they come back to you and say, hey, we like this, for instance, but make these changes, the last thing you would have to do is say, oh, those things aren't problems because I already made these other changes that changes that. And they're like, no, there's a chance they could be like, oh, that's great. Way to forward think. But more likely they'll be like, oh, so now it's not the game we tried. So we need to try it again, but we're busy publishers. So never mind. Right. Mm-hmm. So I always advocate for doing as little as possible with publishers looking at a game. You do play testing. You can make notes, right? But don't make sweeping changes to the game design. My opinion. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I would tend to agree with that. And every time I've given a game to a publisher, I've taken a hands-off approach to it after that. To the point where with Treasure Trouble, after I gave that to AEG at Gen Con, I didn't do anything with it for about 5 months, waiting to hear back from them. And I never gave that update. So I never heard back from them on that. They say that they liked it and they were looking at it, but never heard back. So I'm assuming that means they're not interested.
Well, they like already published it and you just have no idea.
I guess
you're
going to
like buy some AEG box someday and it's just going
to
be in there.
Oh, hey, neat trend. So anyway, so I finally came back to that. I made some balance changes and cleaned up some of the powers and things. And then I just put it on GameCrafter. So to be done with it there. So I've just basically taken a hands-off approach as well. You know, I'm not going to say it's the best attitude to take every way, but it's worked well for me and for my heart, you know? So, you know, I've invested emotionally in that game and when I've turned it over to that person, and I don't want to keep investing in that, you know, and keep right. upping that tension for me, because for my own, you know, mental health, it's just better for me to just let it go and put it there and then move on to something else to put my heart into, so that if I do get a denial from that other from that publisher on the game, that I'm not still super emotionally invested in that thing.
Right.
I'm probably overthinking that and worrying too much about it, but whatever.
No, I mean, that's kind of describes how I feel as well too.
Yeah.
So, all right, next. This is a really interesting one. This is from Grand Gamers Guild. So Mark Spector, mm-hmm. he said, talk about designer responsibilities after the contract is signed.
So designer responsibilities, I think number one is, follow your publisher's instructions.
To a T,
you know, I think it's healthy. It's good for you and important for you to ask the publisher what they want you to say and what subjects to talk about and what not to talk about, right? Or how much you should talk about. Like we are in a special position because we have a podcast, right?
Right, right.
We talk about this crap a lot.
And that's something we've talked about with publishers before signing, specifically yeah. for that reason.
Right. So I talk with AJ and I talk with the folks at Playco to kind of say, you know, hey, I will not do any messaging that you do not approve. And I might, if you're okay with that, I might ask you if I can do some messaging from time to time, but I will not say anything unless you give me the thumbs up or the thumbs down. So follow their instructions. I think also while the Kickstarter is going on, I think you should follow their lead.
Yes.
You know, ask them, hey, how do you want me to conduct myself with comments.
Right. And, do you want me to answer questions when I can?
Or do you want me to stay out of the way? Up. Right. Yeah. So you need to take their direction on that because you know they have a marketing plan.
Right. And we have seen instances where designers haven't and it has hurt the game.
Sure. Right.
I've seen instances where it's maybe slowed down a Kickstarter. I've seen where it's helped the Kickstarter, but they may be promising things that the publisher can't do.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
It is not your game anymore.
Right.
Your
right.
name is on the box, but you do not own it.
Right. I go back to what we said before. You know, for me, it's a hobby. For them, it's a business.
Exactly.
I need to be respectful of that. So basically do as they tell you. And if they don't tell you what to do, then just don't do anything.
Yes. Or at least ask, you know?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it's always good to ask.
Right.
So,
Did that fully answer the question? I'm sorry. What was the question again?
So what are the designer's responsibilities?
Okay.
So, couple more notes. Different publishers want different levels of help with development, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
These are questions you should ask going in.
Mm-hmm.
Some designers are more than happy to just be done with the game when they sign over.
Mm-hmm.
I can go either way. Working with Mark, I had a lot of say, right? I mean, he was the publisher. Mm-hmm. He pulled rank a couple times and that's cool, you know? And he was always extremely respectful of that, more than he honestly probably needed to be. But he's just an upstanding guy and he wants to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So he would say, you know, we're going to do it this way because this is what I feel like we have to do. And I was like, you're the boss, you know? But I loved having say. I loved, you know, having a vote on things. Mm-hmm. That was cool. That said, if a publisher said, Jason, this game's cool, we're going to do some development on it, we're going to publish it, we'll let you know. Done. I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. I will gladly give a game away and just walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think I would love to sell to a publisher where I can just step away, only because I'd like to experience that, right? You know, you feel like you've put in your work, you've done your time, you've developed as far as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now they're taking it. So, but as long as you're clear up front with a publisher about those things, you know, those are the expectations you have. How much work do they want you to do? That's good to know because some people want to do more than others.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So that's, again, talk to the publisher and communicate with them and make sure you're clear on each other's expectations. Mainly you need to be clear on their expectations. That's the main thing.
Ben Pinchback had a response to, what do you do, if another game comes out? Ben suggested throw it in the corner, cry, and never look at it again. That was his, and Ben is very successful. So I would tend
maybe,
to believe him.
Maybe even pee on it.
Which will be easy to do because you've been drinking so much.
Right.
So. And then the other thing, Ben just said, hey, here's something you could talk about. What about an idiot spy that was trying different regional sodas along the way?
It hurts me, Ben. It hurts me. It hurts my heart. It hurts my heart. It hurts me in my heart.
When does he own that game? When does he own Idiot Spy?
At Unpub.
At Unpub.
That's when it's his. I mean, he can have it now. I'm done with it.
Oh, so.
Yeah.
Ben.
It's all yours, buddy.
So, Ben, you've got a couple weeks to Unpub.
Yeah.
We expect to see Idiot Spy by Ben Pinchback.
I just don't know what to do with it. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know. It's his. You can have it, Ben.
Cool.
All
right.
It kind of crushes me a little bit. It hurts inside. Again,
it's a funny theme.
Hurts my heart. Yeah.
All right. Now Rob's going to pitch a game.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't have a game to pitch, Jason.
Yeah.
I have nothing. I've had family in town and I've been sick and I've just had things going on. Just haven't really, my head has not been in game design over the last few weeks. And, I apologize to the builders for that. I apologize to Matthew, who I've been working on, Eight Arms with. It's my turn to get some work done on that. And I apologize to Matthew for dropping the ball on that for the last few weeks. So, I need to get back into it and I need you, Jason, to challenge me right now to challenge me to get me thinking again.
All right. Well, I pick something that's going to make you think real hard and think outside of the box. So I just took a picture of you sitting here on the show that I'm going to put in the show notes when you pitch this game. That's why I took the picture so I don't forget. In that picture were three pieces of construction equipment. We have a backhoe with a plow, right? We have, these are Legos, by the way.
I think it'd
be
a front loader. It's probably a front loader.
Then we have a claw digger thing. I don't know what that's called.
Yeah, I don't know what to call that.
So, and it's very small.
It's neat looking.
And then there's a wrecking ball.
A Lego wrecking ball.
Lego wrecking. So it's all like, so those are three machines.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to pitch a game about doing something, and the main mechanic of the game
mm-hmm.
has to be on your turn using one of those machines to perform an action.
Okay.
So everything else literally could care less.
Okay. So the wrecking ball is about smashing things.
I've heard that.
Uh-huh. The we'll call it a digger. So the little thing that we're not sure what it is, I'm going to call it a digger. It's got like
that's what my son calls it.
Claw on the front with three teeth on it. Hopefully you can discern the three teeth on it from the picture that are in the show notes. It's the littlest one though, if you're looking at the show notes. So that one I'm going to call a digger. And then there's the front loader, which has the bucket on the front and the scoop in the back. So the wrecking ball is about smashing, the digger is about digging, and the other thing is versatile. It's all purpose.
Makes sense. Okay.
Kind of a wild card, maybe.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, all right. So Can I this is a Lego wrecking ball. Can I pretend that we're talking about like a full on realistic wrecking ball?
These are the three machines I wanted you to use.
Okay.
So
all right.
Anything is negotiable after that.
Doesn't necessarily have to be like a realistic wrecking ball that is designed like this Lego example.
Right.
Because if it was, it'd be about 8 feet tall and would be completely useless for wrecking anything.
It would just be good at kneecapping statues.
Right. Yeah. Putting dents in the sides of cars.
Right. It'd be exceptional with that.
Not smashing cars, just putting some dents in the doors. Okay.
It'd be like playing the game Rampage, but only ever punching the bottom of the building.
Right. Okay. So we are, what are we doing here? So it's construction equipment. I think that, so we're smashing, we're digging, and we are plowing. Let's say it's plowing.
Could be moving as well.
Moving earth.
I wasn't actually trying to make this super hard. I was just trying to make it something different.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I can add more machines?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I think these are... But on every turn, you have to use one of these three.
Yes. I mean, if you were like, I want to add a couple more machines, I think that's fine. I mean... Okay.
So this game is... I want to say this is some kind of a competition. It's some kind of a challenge. What is it? Is it like the Olympics of construction equipment?
I would watch that.
Help me with a name. I need something else to hook me into this.
Other than construction Olympics.
Yeah, that's dumb. Help me with a, dig for your life.
I was going to say build or die, which is pretty close.
Build or die. Let's do build or die. Build or die. Build or die.
It could be a zombie game.
Nope. Maybe. What if it is a zombie game?
They're trying to build a...
So, yeah. So this is a construction site after the zombie apocalypse. And,
pretty sure this hasn't been done yet.
Right. And the gentlemen who were working these machines died from the zombie virus and are just going through the motions that they went through in life, now in death. And they're just zombies who are just driving these things around and swinging things around aimlessly. So I think this is a dexterity game. Okay. Okay. These things are little wind up figures. Okay.
Nice.
Okay. So the players, every player has a pawn and the board is a construction site. Okay. The wrecking ball is fixed in the center Okay, it's fixed in the center, right? And it's and so it's got a little wind up thing, and you're gonna wind it up, and it's gonna spin, right? And it's gonna spin, and it's gonna knock anything over that it might hit. Okay, so then the digger, you're gonna when you wind that thing up, it's gonna move, and it's gonna just kind of move in a circle. Just kind of randomly in a circle. It's always going to be turning left, let's say. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But coincidentally, it could keep moving out, right? It wouldn't.
Yeah. It's not going to be the same circle. It's just going to be constantly turning left, but it'll be erratic or some wiggle. And, you know, you never know what's going to do, right? And it could bump into something. Okay. So, and then the plow, the front loader, that is. That machine doesn't work. Machine doesn't work. It's a machine you can control. That's the one. So nobody died in that one. That's the machine that you have control of.
So that's like the dude who's still alive.
Right, right. So you are a group of people, and you are you need to cross the construction site. Okay. And you are going to be using cubes and sticks to create a path, okay? Because this construction site, this is the root, the center of the zombie apocalypse, and so the whole area is toxic waste, okay? The whole area is toxic waste.
Sounds
you can't touch the ground.
Scary.
You can't touch the ground. So, you know, probably not sticks. I'm going to say like chipboard planks. We'll call them chipboard planks.
I did have one thought that I throw at you here, because you're talking about cubes, is the front-end loader type guy.
Yeah.
You could totally put cubes in it. So if this was spinning around, it could smack it. Because like you basically have people, right, riding in this as you're trying to get it across.
Mm-hmm.
Tremors. They do it in Tremors.
They do it in Tremors. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm thinking, so everybody has cards. And on your turn, so everybody starts the game with a hand of five cards. And those cards... are going to be, some of them are going to be building equipment. So you can stack cubes, or you can take cubes, or you can take planks from the supply. Other cards are going to be action cards, and you can play them to place those pieces within a distance of where your pawn is right now, right? And so, you know, it might be card width or card length from where your guy is. That's for placing cubes.
Mm-hmm.
You got to place a plank across two cubes, okay? You can stack them higher if you want to, maybe, but you probably don't want to stack them too high, because that gets precarious.
Right.
So you want to build a path. You want to build a path from one side of the construction site to another. So every time you move your pawn, so on your turn, you're gonna draw back up to five cards. You can play as many cards as you want on your turn to collect components and build a path, and then you can move your pawn the entire distance you have in front of you. Okay. And then I think there are like islands that are printed on the board that are like safe areas that are not actually contaminated, you know, so you can build a bridge to a specific spot, like an island in the toxic waste.
So
be safe there.
Is this game in real time? Because like these things are just moving around all the time.
Well, so right. So after every turn, then you're going to roll a die. Okay. You're going to roll a die. And it's a D6. So if you roll a 1-2, then you could draw an extra card. If you roll a 3-4, then nothing happens. But if you roll a 5-6, then you have to roll the equipment die. And then maybe you're just going to flip a coin, or you roll again and it's odd or even. Okay. Odd, then you have to hit the button on the wrecking ball, and you hit the button, it's going to spin. Even and you have to wind up the little guy, the little digger guy, and it's going to go. And you're going to hope that it's going to not knock over what you just built and knock your pawn into the toxic waste.
That makes sense.
Okay. So you want to be the first one to get across to the other side. So build or die is pretty good. What else is in there? I think, so if your guy falls in the toxic waste, he becomes a zombie. and you got to replace him so zombies can get can populate out in the area. So what are you doing then with the front loader? How does that impact the game?
Well, and that's what I was thinking. If you're building the path, right, the front loader can only move through the path, right? So your people could all be like, so your kind of your core people could be on your front loader, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to take them off to do stuff, right? Hmm. So you have to send them, if you say, okay, I'm going to go to this spot and I'm going to place things, you have to have a cube there, right? Mm-hmm. So that's your people who are doing the thing. And then the front loader is driving. So when you say, well, then you can move, then your front loader moves, right? As far as it can in a straight line.
Hmm.
So if you did it that way, then you, that kind of gives you a mechanic to use that, but also means that, or maybe the equipment die, you have to roll the front loader on it to be able to use it, right?
Maybe.
But if that's the case, maybe 4, 5, or 6 let you use yours. A 1, 2, or 3 is, you know, a 1 could be a 1 could be the digger, a 2 could be the wrecking ball, and 3 mm-hmm. could be both.
Okay.
And then 4, 5, and 6 is you instead get to use the...
Yeah. You know what? And I think these have to be some kind of specialized piece of wind-up equipment here where you wind it up at the start of the game, and then you hit a button on the top, and it will randomly release that spring for a random period of time. You know, it might only spin around once,
right.
Might do a half spin, might spin around 3 times, or, you know, that the digger might go for a couple inches, or it might go for 6 inches. You don't know how far
exactly.
It's going to go. And, but eventually the spring will run out, and then you have to rewind it.
Yep.
Okay. There's got to be another element in this here, though. There's another element. What is the other? So I think there might need to be some kind of danger cards or something. That you can play on your opponents. So you could also play cards on your opponents to slow them down.
Well, so if the goal is to get your opponents as much out of your out of the front loader, right? You want to keep your opponents in the front loader where they're safe, right? Because the game could be set in a way so that you're not going to get your front loader is not going to get knocked over by this stuff, right? It's the heaviest piece, right?
It could though. It could. I think if that wrecking ball swings around, it could knock it over.
That's fair, but it's the most secure place you have, right? So by playing danger cards, you could actually be playing like you could have pieces of debris that you could be dropping into people's path. So they then have to send out dudes to move it, right? So that they have to get their cubes out on the table to be moving stuff, which then puts their cubes in more danger.
Mm. Okay.
Another thing you could play with too is elevation. So the...
like a molded board. Yeah.
Well, or even if it was just represented on the board... as you know, shaded for higher.
Mm.
So the easier path would, of course, be to go low, right? But those, if the path is broken, are flooded with toxic waste, right? Whereas if you were to take the time to go over a higher path, your path being broken, it would only be flooded with toxic waste if there was toxic waste higher than it around it, right?
Yeah.
And since you're doing constructions, I feel like different levels and elevations make sense.
Oh, yeah, it does, yeah. Right.
So... Yeah. And I don't think it actually has to be. You could do that with a drawing, without it having to be a molded board. I mean, since it's got all this crap on it, a molded board's probably not a bad idea,
right? So I'm actually thinking that you might be able to do. You might just be able to do cut out pieces of chipboard that you put on top of cubes, you know, and you just set up the board at the start of the game. You know, everybody draws one tile to put out there somewhere, and then you could play cards later that allow you to raise or lower the land.
Yeah, with like earthquakes and stuff like
or,
that.
Or
yeah.
with your machinery, your construction equipment.
Oh, duh. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe that's a way to go.
That's not bad. So winning is just crossing to the other side then?
Yeah, you want to get, it's a race kind of, it's a race. Right. But, you know, as you build structures, then your opponents might be able to use your structures, right? It's one of those things where, you know, you're building a bridge across a river or whatever. We've toyed with those ideas before.
And, you know, one of the fun things about this could be that it's not just who gets there first. Getting there first is a bonus, but it's who gets there with the most people safely, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, or, you know, basically the first person doesn't win. Yeah, you know, the last person always loses, right? So that way, what you don't end up with in a 3-player game is 2 people sitting there waiting for a 3rd player to finish.
Mm-hmm.
But that 1st or 2nd player to finish could win, right? In a 4-player game, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, And you could still be actively playing cards to screw with your opponent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Or maybe if you get to the end first, you get to continuously spawn survivors on the other side who, without the front end loader, can attempt to get across. They're incredibly vulnerable, right? Because they have no protection.
Yeah, I was thinking this is being kind of freeform, but I think it needs to have some kind of a grid on it to kind of control placement and movement.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or even if it was just areas, like small areas that weren't, you know, that weren't grid shaped necessarily, but that were, you know, area control style areas.
Yeah.
You could do that with chipboard that you placed on the board as well. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a patchwork style thing where the board is covered mostly with other things. But I honestly, that still leads itself to a grid probably.
Sure.
The most easily.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. So build or die. Is that what we said?
Build or die.
Build or die. Okay. That's really lame. It's really lame.
But you took it in an interesting direction, different than I would have expected.
Yeah, what would you? What were you expecting?
That you were just, it was just going to be a simple thing about building stuff. Like you were just going to, oh, I'm at the construction site and I'm competing to build stuff.
Yeah, see, that's super boring.
It is, but it's that's honestly where I thought you'd go with an easy pitch.
So I was thinking about, one of my favorite games that I've got is Dragon Strike. It's an old Milton Bradley game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's got a dragon in the middle that with a, you hit a button and the neck spins around and it's got like one of those wiggly plastic snake things for the neck of the dragon. And so it spins around back and forth randomly. And because of the way that neck articulates, you never really know where the dragon's head's going to sweep by.
Right.
And so as you're moving your pawns around the board, you have to pick up these gems and you put them on top of your board, on top of your pawn. And so that dragon might sweep around and knock the gems out of your hands. And then you have to leave and come back to pick those things up, or someone else might be able to steal it. It's just a really dumb little kid's game, but I love that game. I love that game. It's super broken and stupid. It's roll and move. You know, it's garbage, but I love it so much.
Yeah. Because
if I get that out of the party and I'm like, all right, guys, this is, you know, you guys know how much I like games, right? You know how much I love games. So we're going to play Dragon Strike. And they go, Dragon Strike? I've never heard of that one. What's that? And I pull like that box out and they go, is this a kid's game? And then I pull out the dragon with the motorized neck and everybody goes,
I want to play this game.
It's terrible, but I love it. It's one of those guilty pleasure games for me.
All right.
Yeah. Do we have any more Twitter questions or anything?
Nope, I have a voicemail.
Oh, good. Voicemail. I like voicemails.
BGG in Larkspur, how's it going? Driving around on Monday, January something or another, listening to episode 140-something. See, Rob, I can do it too. And I was thinking about both the Lumberjack game and the Inexorable March to the Grave, I think it was, the one we played at Grand Con a few years ago, Rob. And where are they at? And if they're nowhere, can I just have the files so I can make a print and play for myself? I'm thinking about them, so I'd like to play them. And then also, Jason, back in the day, early days of the BTG podcast, you did a game about the art house or the something house where it was really messy and then you had to clean up for the landlord and there was like two phases. And I thought the game had potential, but at the same time, the pitch totally sucked. So I was wondering if I challenge you, I should say, to repitch that game and rethink about it now so many years later when I think your chops are just that much stronger. Anyways, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
that was my game. It was the Filth Ranch.
Filth Ranch, yeah.
That was my pitch.
I did remember that name.
Yeah.
It was my pitch. Stay away from it.
The Filth Ranch.
It was a bad pitch, and it was a gross game idea, but it wasn't...
Well, so here's the thing. It's not that much... It's not any more gross than Garbage Day is. It's basically the same theme.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah. It's just Garbage Day is the second half... thematically, it's the second half of the Filth Ranch game. Actually, no, I'm sorry. Garbage Day is the same as the first half of the of my Filth Ranch game. Right. Mechanically, totally different, but thematically, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really funny.
Yeah. As for the other games, Lumberjack game.
Lumberjacking? Lumberjack off?
Lumberjack. Lumberjack. Log jamming. I've never done anything with that game beyond what I did because I just, yeah. I liked the game. The problem it came down to was it ended up with the whole an infinite loop draw, and that wasn't fun. And then I just, yeah, then I stopped. So I gladly send you the print and play files, though. I mean, that's fine with me. I do have them.
Yeah, and the inexorable march to the grave, it still just didn't feel right for me. I don't know. And I appreciate your help on that. We played that through together, I don't know, 3 or 4 times that weekend, and talked about it pretty intensely.
I enjoyed playing it.
I just feel like it wasn't more than about 60% of a game. That's about all that was there. But yeah, I mean, yeah, the print and play on that was just, it was just some faces that I pulled off a Google image search. There really weren't a lot of mechanics. It was just some faces that I'd print out as cards and some cubes. I don't even know if I still have rules for that anywhere. Because I think a lot of those rules, Lynn, you and I just kind of made up as we went along. And I didn't take any notes because I was bad about taking notes in those days. Anyway. So I guess that'll do it. Thanks again for calling, Lynn. Keep it up, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I hope that some other builders out there will see Lynn's frequent activity as a challenge. And
also call in.
And call the Google Voice number, which is 770-TEL-BTG. You know, if you're international and you don't want to call that, you can always just record something on your home computer or on your telephone, your pocket telephone, and email a sound file to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
You can also go to our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at JASlingerland, and I'm at poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and other great podcast locations. And we'll see you again next week, where we do more of this crazy, stupid garbage that we do. And don't let anybody tell you different. It's stupid garbage, because we are stupid garbage. Jason, take us home.
Every day that you wake up is a chance to fail again. And likely, 99% of the days of your life, you will fail. In fact, I will say that 100% of the days of your life, you will fail. You'll fail. It'll be sad. It'll be boring. And at the end of the day, you'll go to bed and you'll think, why did I even bother? Why did I even bother? And then one day you're going to wake up and you're going to feel like you've succeeded. But when you look back on that day, you're going to realize you also failed that day too. And you should get comfortable with that. Get comfortable with being a failure, because learning to be comfortable being a failure is what will make you grow and be better in your life. Fail, friends. Fail every day. Fail. And then design games that are really good and try and get them published. You're probably going to fail at that too, though. Let's just be honest. Hey, on that cheery note, have a great day.
I think I'm going to go kill myself.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
So you're pitching a game.
Oh, yeah. I have nothing to pitch, Jason. So I'm going to need you to give me a pitch challenge.
You said you did have something.
Then I worked all day instead of... Yeah, so I'm going to need a pitch challenge. I don't care what you want to do. Do you want to give me a title? Do you want to give me a theme? I don't care.
Do you want to know ahead of time?
No.
Okay. I mean, I just need to know if you want to think about it during the show.
No.
Doesn't matter to me.
Okay.